This is the Thanks for Sharing podcast, the podcast where we explore all things recovery, healing, and relationship.
Remember to subscribe and download episodes in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on the Podbean app.
You can find more Thanks for Sharing at www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com or on Facebook at facebook.com/healingpaths. That's paths with an S.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Thanks for Sharing. I'm Jackie P.
I'm John T.
So today we're continuing. We're almost through the steps from the different fellowships and the different big books.
Yeah.
We are on step 11 today.
I almost forgot our podcast was about other things because we've been doing this for so long.
We have been doing. This is our go-to, oh, yeah, we know what we're talking about because we've had 12 steps to cover and
Right. We're
almost done. So I've started compiling a list of other things that I've thought about that we could do for the podcast. So we are not running out of stuff to talk about.
And I'm glad that you said that because I was just about to say, hopefully after step 12, there's still a podcast because my brain is just on the steps.
There's always more. So let's just talk about real quick what step 11 says. So step 11 says, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood God. It says him. I like to replace that with as we understand God.
And unfortunately, many of the fellowships are very male-centric.
Yes.
We need some new editions of these books.
We do. And then it says, praying only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. Now, some of you may not care if it's the male pronoun, and that's fine. But, you know, as a female, I'm kind of sensitive to all the male language that's there, and I always have to adjust it. So I just use the neutral God word. So I wanted to start out real briefly initially in step 11 of the 12 Principles book. The principle associated with step 11 is meaning, and it talks about, you may have heard this, you know, referenced in some of your fellowships. In 1942, Bill W. wrote a letter, and one of the lines out of that letter, he says, in God's economy, nothing is wasted. And in the 12 Principles book, Carnes writes and says, life is full of loose ends, uncertainty, confusion, and frustration. Yet nothing is wasted or random or pointless. Everything that happens is nourishing compost for our spiritual and emotional growth. It is in the midst of the messiness of life that we often find meaning, or sometimes that meaning finds us. I really thought that was a great place to start step 11 because step 11, I mean, it has some, maybe some structure to it, but it isn't very structured.
I mean, yeah, it has structure in that it uses some words that I think people think are very narrowly defined.
Yeah.
Which in reality, they're not at all.
Right.
And that's what, as I was reading through my different fellowship books, that's what I saw, is that there's a million and one ways to approach this.
Yes. And hinging on the fact that we've worked the previous 10 steps.
Yes. That was one of the, I forget which book I was reading it in, that said, you know, in step 11, you're going to be talking to a kind and merciful and loving
Right. Higher
power. And that just reminded me how important it is to have step 2 and 3 figured out and worked through before you try to move on, because so much hinges on that. I have a God who accepts me.
Yep.
I have a place in this world. I'm lovable no matter what.
Mm-hmm. One of the books, and I think I underlined it and we'll be reading from it, I can't remember which one, but it kind of talked about, like, if we don't know how to take our own inventory, then what good is the conscious contact with God? Because God is maybe a manifestation of our own narcissistic self.
It's just somebody else that you're BSing with.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, so let's start. What book do you want to start in?
We're going to end with
ACA, of course.
I'll take a look at the 12 and 12. There's something in here I really liked. So this is just on the first page of step 11, page 96. It says, we AAs are active folk, enjoying the satisfactions of dealing with the realities of life, usually for the first time in our lives, and strenuously trying to help the next alcoholic who comes along. So it isn't surprising we often tend to slight serious meditation and prayer as something not really necessary. To be sure, we feel it as something that might help in meeting the occasional emergency. But at first, many of us are apt to regard it as a somewhat mysterious skill of clergymen from which we may hope to get a secondhand benefit. Or perhaps we don't believe in these things at all. And it really struck me after reading that paragraph, which addict has not lived their life in constant mm-hmm. crisis and emergency?
Right.
And I think for me, that's one of the things that step 11 reminds me, is that there's always a need. And if I'm talking myself out of that need to have contact right. with my higher power, I'm probably in trouble.
Right, because it says, you know, it isn't surprising that we often tend to slight serious meditation and prayer as something not really necessary until we're in an emergency.
Right.
And then we're like, oh, hey, by the way, can you help me out and do A, B, C, and D?
Right, so I really like that approach. And basically, you know, your life has been an emergency. Mm-hmm. And you need to treat it as such. Like, don't right. forget that this is where life goes when it's unattended yeah. to.
It's one of those examples I've used before where, you know, I'm not always the best patient. And so sometimes, you know, the last time I got strep throat, they said, you know, here's this antibiotic and you'll feel better within 24 hours, but take it for the full mm-hmm. course, right? And I was like, okay. And I took it, and, you know, 24 hours later, I'm feeling like a new person. I'm like, this is great. I'm better. I think I took it for like 2 more days, and then I forgot.
Because that's good enough.
Right? And about a week later, I'm like, oh, I'm feeling kind of the same that I did before.
And now it's antibiotic resistant. Right?
And I had to go in and be like, so, I think I have strep throat again. No, I did not finish, so I need the step above the last antibiotic. I promise I will finish. But I think we do that a lot of times. Like, we start to feel better, and we stop doing what made us feel better in the first place.
Well, and it goes on to talk about how we have a misconceptualization of what that stuff actually is. It says, those of us who come to make regular use of prayer would no more do without it than we refuse air, food, or sunshine. Mm. And for the same reason. When we refuse air, light, or food, our body suffers. And when we turn away from meditation and prayer, we likewise deprive our minds, our emotions, and our intuitions of vitally needed support. As the body can fail its purpose for lack of nourishment, so can the soul. You know, that's something I think over the last 8 months I've really worked at, just having a consistent moment in my day where I'm consciously in contact with myself, with my higher power. Mm-hmm. And as we get into some of this other stuff, we'll read about what prayer and meditation can look like. But I definitely notice that on days that I don't do that, there's a noticeable difference.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I can slip back into my way of thinking a year ago where I didn't have that as part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fine.
Right.
But I was missing vital nourishment.
Yeah. Well, I think it's also I can relate to that. Like, I'm fine. Like, nothing serious is going on or no crisis manifests itself. But I'm living in this, like, day in, day out.
Mm-hmm.
Just get up, go to work. Okay, and now it's the weekend. Oh, now it's back to work. And there's not really a conscious engagement mm-hmm. with my life. And there's not a conscious engagement with the people in my life. And that's not really fine. Like, well, it's not falling apart,
mm-hmm.
but it's not fine.
I think that's always the foundation, that humdrum day in, day out. Mm-hmm. Every day looks the same. That's the foundation addiction is built on.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, in Essanon, on page 128, it says, in order to stay in proper balance, we would like to offer another word of caution. People who try to run their lives by claiming explicit guidance from God might easily and unconsciously rationalize their answers when they are not answers from God at all. With the best of intentions, these people might misinterpret God's will and create much confusion by forcing upon others their idea of God's will. This means they are living with a certain amount of presumption and pride. Essanon experience shows that it is better to pray for God's will to be done not only in our lives, but in the lives of others as well, while not claiming to know what that might be. For example, mm-hmm. we may think that all those who perceive to be addicted or codependent need to be in 12-step recovery. We may be right in theory, but wrong about God's timing for another person. In this case, we do well to remember, live and let live.
Yeah, that reminds me, I recently listened to, you told me to listen to this, an interview with Richard Rohr.
Mm, yes, love him.
He was on the show On Being, and he talked about kind of accepting God as mysterious.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about that yesterday. I've been having several conversations with different people in my life about religious belief and concept of God and things like that, and as I was driving home yesterday, I was thinking, like, I think it's kind of great to think of a God that I don't fully understand everything about. Like, yes. I don't want God that I can distill down and put in a bottle and keep in my pocket. Like, I want a God who's big enough to handle it all.
Right.
So I really like that. Like, we can pray for God's will to be done, but then we need to be willing to admit we really have no clue what that will is.
We can't be narcissistic enough to think that we know what God's will looks like.
Well, this must be God's will because I prayed for this and God will and listen to me.
And it looks just like what I wanted.
How convenient.
It also says this. It says, the combination of self-examination, meditation, and prayer gives us a foundation for living. The regular practice of prayer and meditation rewards us with emotional balance, a sense of belonging, and knowing that God watches lovingly over us. Even when we feel cut off from our higher power's help and direction, which we all experience sometimes, we should simply resume prayer as soon as we can, doing what we know to be good for us. Our situation then becomes less disturbing, and we begin to feel safer in the world. As we gain small glimpses of God's reality, we know our path will continue to lead us to greater knowledge of God's will.
I like that. Let's see. I'm going to go next to Recovering Couples Anonymous. I should really read the rest of this book because the steps are only like the first 40 pages.
Oh.
And there's...
and there's sure more there's, beyond.
I'm sure there's more good stuff in here. So they dissect the Serenity Prayer, and they suggest if you're not familiar with prayer or you don't know how prayer is supposed to work for you, this is a good format to follow the Serenity Prayer. And I would echo that. When Carver Brown came for Back to Basics, he said you need to pray at least once a day, God keep me sober. And I would say for me, like, that's my prayer on 99.9% of days, because that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
It's something that I want, and I know that...
Well, and then you're also not telling God what to do, which doesn't work.
Right. Dang it. So it says that serenity means that we're no longer recoiling from the past and no longer living in the fear because of our present behavior. We're not worrying about the future. To maintain serenity, we regularly seek healthier behaviors. We try to avoid depletion, which tends to make us vulnerable to despair of old destructive patterns. And then to accept the things we cannot change. Acceptance means acknowledging that there are situations over which we have no control. By changing our behavior, we avoid the suffering that comes from clinging to that which no longer exists. Instead of changing our behavior to start this chain reaction that then changes everybody else's behavior to align with what we wanted in the first place. The courage to do the things, or to change the things we can. Courage to change involves giving up our attempts to control outcomes, but it does not require that we give up our boundaries or best efforts. It does mean an honest appraisal of the limits of what we can change. And then the wisdom to know the difference. Wisdom in RCA often comes from painful experiences in which we tried to control situations that frightened us, only to discover that we could not. Wisdom is our ability to evaluate our past experiences, learn from them, and let them go. Wisdom is critical in determining which things we can change and which we can't. Once we arrive at a degree of acceptance and begin to let go, we find new energy and enthusiasm for life. Mm. So for me that highlights, I think, one of the principles of conscious contact. You know, anyone who's been to a 12-step meeting more than once has the Serenity Prayer, something that they can drone along with the rest of the group as they say it. And I think that conscious contact part is there may be some rote or some routine parts of our routines or our our contact with God. But there's always a level of consciousness that we can bring to that. So I appreciated how it pulls apart each of those, and each of those in and of itself is a meditation of where I'm at, what do I need, what does life look like now?
Yeah. I'm going to move to the SA White Book on page 136. I think there was actually two things in here that I was looking at. Oh, okay, so before we get... Yeah, on page 136 it says... Striving after God is as natural as breathing. Most of mankind has been praying from the beginning. Man has been called the praying animal. The problem was not God. There was something wrong with us. Our wrongs had separated us, not from praying to God, many of us did that ad nauseum, but from union with our God. As a result, our concept of God was wrong, and we were lost to the true God. He was either an avenging tyrant we were afraid of to approach, the great authority figure, a Santa Claus, or some other reflection of our distorted attitudes and dysfunctional relationships. We acted as though being good, not acting out, somehow earned us the right to be bad, act out. Mm-hmm. We were trying to manipulate or make deals with God like we did with others, creating a God to suit our sickness. And if we snagged the brass ring on the merry-go-round once in a while, we were superstitious enough to believe our way and our kind of God was working, enough to keep pulling us on for another free whirl. Some of us never got the brass ring, and some of us didn't care whether there was a brass ring or not, but kept on endlessly paying the price of admission anyway. And I like that because, you know, I've talked before, I've even talked with my kids about how, I mean, once they were old enough to recognize that Santa Claus wasn't real, that God is not a Santa Claus. You don't just, you know, make it on the good list, and as long as you're on the good list, you get whatever you want and ask for. But I had this experience this spring, and it was one of those, I mean, you know, for those of you who are parents, you kind of know the pain of when your kids are going through something and you can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
That powerless, helpless, angst that I just hate. So I've talked before about my, you know, 17-year-old daughter, daughter number three, who is trying out for soccer. And she's had a lot of, she's actually a really good soccer player, but she's had a lot of trauma around tryouts and just the political process that's mm-hmm. involved in kids' competition sports.
Because you and Jeff won't fork up enough money to get her any
right, and
she
we
wants.
Just don't know how to play the politics well enough that it doesn't help us. So anyway, so it was coming on this, and I remember like it was the night before one of the tryouts, and I was laying in bed, and I said out loud, my husband was asleep, and he's a deep sleeper, so he usually doesn't hear me when I talk out loud. And and I just said, you know, God, I don't think it really works this way because it never has worked this way in my life. But it seems to work this way for other people where they just ask for what they want and magically it happens. And I would really like that this time. So it's never really happened. So if I have so many tokens for magic, I'd like to use them now. And I just was like, please just let her make this team. Like, I want her to make this team. And I want you to make that happen. Because I've sat in enough, like, after it's all over, and parents who were like, my daughter really isn't even this good. We were so surprised she made the team. And I'm like, my daughter is this good, and she didn't make the team.
Yeah.
So I was just like, please just let that happen. And then I was leaving out of town for the GLI that I've talked about. And then she was going to be doing some tryouts while I was gone. And so I had kind of said that prayer. I left, was gone for a week, and knew that, like, it didn't really happen that way, and it didn't. And she didn't make that team. She made a different one, but that's a different story. But when I was on the GLI, we did this, one day we did this vision quest. And we were out, you know, in nature at a place I'd never been. And we had to find a spot in which we were all by ourselves and couldn't really, I knew kind of where some other people were, but I couldn't see them. They couldn't see me. I was really by myself, and we were going to be there for hours. And, you know, once I got past the fear of, like, is that a rattlesnake? Is that a rattlesnake? What does a rattlesnake sound like? Once I kind of calmed down. But before we had gone out, Rod was kind of leading us in this kind of like a medicine wheel, talking about the Native American medicine wheel. And each of us went through and talked about, you know, he said, we're going to invite the spirit or the energy of somebody. It can be somebody dead or somebody living, that you're going to take that energy with you into your vision quest. And at the time I had said, you know, I'm going to take all of my daughters, like the energy of the four daughters that I have, because I think each of them, you know, just kind of talking, if you're familiar with the medicine wheel, each of them, they're different, and in each of them had different qualities that kind of manifested on all of the medicine wheel. And he had talked about, you know, as he was going through and kind of putting the animal with each one, and he talked about, like, the feminine, and it was kind of represented as a fawn or a doe. And so I had just been listening to that and didn't think much of it. You know, I was kind of like, that's cool. I don't know how much I believe in it, but that's cool. And so I had said that and was participating. And I'm on this vision quest, and I finally, like, find my spot, I did not take the right shoes, so I had flip-flops. They said it was a grassy pasture. They did not tell me the grass was above my waist. So I'm with flip-flops and no traction, which also wasn't good. But I finally found my spot and got my bearings, sat down, kind of tapped down the grass so I could sit there. And I sit down and I look up and there is this doe, like not far from me at all, just watching me, like not startled by me, just looking at me. And I sit down and I kind of look and I'm like, oh, hello. And she just kind of tilted her head to one side, tilted her head to the other side, and then just made eye contact with me for, you know, maybe 5 seconds, and then galloped off. And I was just like, in that moment, I was like, I don't know what that was. And I kind of knew in my head, it took me back to that prayer that I had said where I was just like, can I have magic? And I was just like, you know what? I don't think my daughter's going to make that soccer team.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really believe that God works that way. And I don't know that I need God to work that way. But that moment right there with that doe, that was God.
Yeah.
And I don't even know what that was, right? But I felt it. I experienced it. It was something. And again, it goes back to God gets to be mysterious.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't like this, do this, go here, you're here, you need to be here, here's how you get there. Nothing like that. It was just this moment of like, I see you.
Yeah.
And that's all.
Yeah.
It was really, for me, it was something that I was just like, okay, I'm holding on to that. Like that was something. It was way bigger than me. It would not be an outcome I would ever even dream up.
And I would imagine, Jackie, like that would not be your first experience with conscious contact with God.
Right.
But I bet previous experiences didn't teach you what that one did.
No.
And so as I look at this as a daily practice, daily we're working to improve our conscious contact with God, is, you know, because I think we always need updating on how we're understanding mm-hmm. God and how we're understanding how God works in our life.
Mm-hmm.
Because I hope, and, you know, I could be wrong. If you know otherwise, here's a call out for Colin, like email us.
Let us know.
If you know otherwise, let me know. But I think that God can be flexible and God can show up how I need God to show
yes.
up. And if it looks this way today and I need something mm-hmm. different tomorrow, I think God's willing to do that.
Right. Well, and God may never show up like that again in my life. I'm not Snow White. Snow Birds White, don't come Snow and White's sit on my neighbor. Finger. But that it was something, right? And it was a way that God showed up, and I had that conscious contact with that. And I keep that. That's in my heart.
Yeah.
It's always in my heart, and I will remember that. And again, in the essay white book on page 138, I don't really even have anything to read about it, but it talks about noisy souls. And it says, most of us come into Sexaholics Anonymous seem to have our inner being filled with noise much of the time. It's pollution. And we may not be aware of it at first, since it's built up gradually over the years. We don't sense it as abnormal. And I think, again, step 11 gets us into, I mean, some of the steps we've worked previous to this have helped us clear out the noise,
mm-hmm.
clear out the pollution that gradually has built up in our soul. And step 11 says, now that your soul is no longer noisy, you can have conscious contact.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's a lot like step 10, where it maintains gains that we've
mm-hmm.
made. You know, clearing out that noise does not mean that we're now immune to noise.
Right.
We need to practice that quietness. I'm going to go to Sex Addicts Anonymous, the big green book, next. And this talks a little more about how you might experiment with prayer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to make prayer work for you. It says, for many of us, prayer simply means talking with God. Rather than struggling with our life's challenges as if we are alone and need to figure it out ourselves, we share our thoughts and feelings with our higher power. When we pray, in effect, we're saying, here I am, God, and these are my concerns. By sharing ourselves in this way, we bring ourselves regularly into the open, into awareness of God's care. At first, some of us were not very comfortable with praying. Often we held assumptions about what prayer was or what it looked like that held us back. We learned that prayer need not be formal or associated with a religious tradition or text, We can pray in our car or in the shower. We can just say what's on our mind. With practice, we become more comfortable. In time, our prayers become regular conversations with our higher power. That's been a powerful concept that I've seen not just in my life, but a lot of the clients that I work with. And they'll start to slip into this way of talking where they're making decisions. And, you know, early on in recovery, I'll ask, who did you talk to about that? Who are you consulting with? And I have one client particularly who will often say, so I was talking with God about this. And this is what I feel like God is saying to me. Or this thing came up and I checked in with God. And it moved from this, you know, working with this person earlier on, it was like this, anytime they had to approach God, it was like this, I need to make sure I'm completely clean, completely centered, whatever. And now God is this working part of their mind, working part of their life. And it's just like, you know, just like I'd pick up the phone and call my sponsor, I also have that kind of access to my higher power.
I learned this from Dr. Carnes, where he talks about his, what does he call it, his council that he convenes.
Oh, yeah.
And he's got several of his previous therapists on there. You know, a couple of people in his life who are just straight shooters and talk with him about and are really honest in their feedback with him. And so he's got, you know, this panel of people that he has on that council. And when he's thinking over something, you know, that he, in his mind's eye, in his mind, he convenes this council and he gets feedback from each one, what they would say in their voice, you know. And he says, and then I listen to that and sit with that, and that somehow, again, this is the mystery of God, that somehow their voices, his voice, as he's talking it over with them, moves into something higher and becomes God. And gives feedback from that place and offers consultation from that higher power than even that council. And I've done that before, where I take different people in my life and I have a conversation with each of them, and we have this whole grand council. And then, you know, a day or two later, something comes out of that. And I'm like, and now God showed up and said, here, I'm going to weigh in on this.
I like that. Are you ready to go to ACA next?
I am.
There's one last thing I want to share from the General Path Through the 12 Steps. And this is more maybe some things to experiment with in improving your own conscious contact with God. Look any of these up and kind of see how other people use them and consider how you might. This is on page 317. So some forms of prayer meditation you might use. You might want to use a dream journal. You might want to establish a seeking place, which is a place where you go that's dedicated to your spiritual awareness and your quest. You might find a guiding metaphor, either you know, for your whole life or for what you're dealing with. I remember a few years ago, we used a guiding metaphor in working with couples in one of our large groups. We talked about the way of the tortoise and the way of the hummingbird. And how they live life very differently, and there's different situations in life that call for...
That we can't say, oh, I have to be a tortoise all the time or a hare, but knowing when you need to be what.
A collection of sacred things. You know, he talks about Native Americans, their concept of the medicine bag, the God box. The God box is something that I've used personally that's really powerful. A meditative practice. And this one, I think, like, if meditation is what that... what's the word I'm looking for? That stereotype that comes to mind, I can never meditate.
Like,
will just not work for me. But you shared a while ago on our Facebook page, like, a 2-minute introduction to meditation. So for like 6 months, I've been working on meditating consistently, but it's been like, I can do some grounding that I teach to clients. So I'll spend like 2 minutes a day doing that. And with that video, it talked about what the core meditation is you focus on your breath, you get distracted, you go back to focusing on your breath, you get distracted, you go back to focusing on your breath. And I thought, like, that's it. And I think at the end of the video, they said something like, meditation's all about failure and trying again. Like, that's what makes it work. And so since then, it was like, oh, I can do that. So I've been doing more of that and gradually increasing the time. And then the last one, get a spiritual mentor. So somebody who is a wise person, somebody that you trust, somebody that you can talk to about spiritual things. So those are some ideas from A Gentle Path Through the 12 Step for getting started and practices you might put into place with conscious contact with God.
Cool. Okay, let's go into ACA. So kind of on the heels of that conversation with meditation, I just wanted to read from the beginning of step 11 on page 263 in the ACA book. This little story, it says, "When I was introduced to meditation years ago, I was skeptical. I come from a religious affiliation in which meditation was not discussed, much less an option for spiritual growth. I was willing to do what the program asked. I tried it, but nothing seemed to happen for months. I would meditate and become drowsy or be distracted by a buzzing fly or a passing airplane. I continued because I wanted to get the emotional sobriety I heard about in meetings. I liked reading my meditation book, and I thought my daily meditation was relaxing, but not too productive. The first inkling I got that meditation was working occurred at the end of a meeting. It was during the closing prayer. Before I began meditation, I was usually distracted during the prayer. I would shift from foot to foot or keep my eyes open, thinking about what I would do after the meeting. Typically, I never listened to the closing prayer. I don't know which night it was, but it happened during the prayer. As I was standing in the circle after the meeting, I realized that I was motionless. I was present in the moment and listening to the prayer. I was relaxed and allowing the words to enter my mind. I felt at peace the moment I closed my eyes for the prayer. I later recognized this as the relaxed state from my meditation. However, the quickness of the calmness is what struck me. It came immediately as I stood with friends and closed my eyes. I was in my body and in the moment, which had not been possible as a child." So again, just one of those, the gains, I think, from meditation sometimes take time, mm-hmm. and they're also slow. And yeah. so we have to be looking for them.
Well, and there's something else from the 11th step in Adult Children that talks a little bit more about that. So the whole chapter or the whole section around step 11 really focuses on this is a way for you to get back into your body, and it talks about how children who grow up in dysfunctional or addicted homes tend to not pay too much attention to their bodies because mm-hmm. of the painful realities that are there. So this is on page 270. It says, "Step 11 is a point where adult children can get in their bodies and into the moment. By getting in our bodies, we can go out into the world and make our best contributions. This is important work and should be taken seriously. Taking the time to sit quietly and do simple meditative breathing and concentration is a proven way to accomplish this soul healing exercise. By returning to our bodies and becoming aware of our bodies, we find another piece of the puzzle to reconstruct our wholeness. We have all the parts within us, and we are finding them with God's help." That kind of reminds me, I recently listened to a history of World War II and learned way more about the bombing campaign and the atomic bombs in Japan than I had before. And I'm astounded that people live in those places again.
Yeah.
And we even look at, you know, Fukushima was how long ago? 5 years ago?
Yeah.
Something like that. People are back living there. And I think that's a good guiding metaphor for this getting back in your body. Your body can become such a dangerous place that you mm-hmm. disassociate from. Time is going to need to pass for things to calm down. Work is going to need to be done to move things to their proper place. But there comes a time where it's safe to move back.
Mm-hmm.
And gauging where it's safe to move back is not moving back and seeing if you get sick, or moving back and seeing if all your hair falls out.
Right.
There's probes and tests, and you know we know this about the condition. So I think that meditation practice is some of that slowly getting acquainted with your body again and learning that it's safe to be in your body again.
To reclaim and rebuild. I like this story in ACA on page 265. It talks about this ACA man who had, you know, gotten sober and was working what he thought was a program. And let me see. Oh, it says, okay, sorry, it's on page 269. It says, "We know of an adult child who sought help for his dysfunctional upbringing. He was sober and clean, but he sensed that something was not right. He compulsively acted out in other areas of his life, but he maintained his drug-free lifestyle. His acting out caused him great shame. His issues of frozen feelings and dissociating from his body came up during an early counseling session. During the session, his therapist asked a simple question: how does it feel to feel loved? The adult child struggled with an answer and tried to offer a definition of love. However, the counselor gently interrupted and said, "No, I'm not looking for a definition of love. I want to know what it feels like in your body to feel loved. When I feel loved, my breathing is easier. There's a warmth in my face below the skin, and I feel like smiling a lot." The counselor repeated her question, "What does it feel like to feel loved?" The adult child just said he stared at her. He could not answer. He later realized he was 26 years old and could not recall feeling loved. He had never stopped to think about it until that day. He knew his parents had cared for him and provided food and shelter. They had said they loved him, but he could not remember feeling safe or loved as a child. His alcoholic father threatened the family and cursed his children. The simple question about feeling loved raised the question of whether the adult child had truly been loved at all. He was so shut down emotionally, he could not recall the physical reaction, bodily reaction, of feeling loved. He recalled being an object of infatuation in a relationship, but that never seemed to last. He had never felt warmth in his face, and his breathing had not been made easier by the infatuation. And it goes on to talk about how, you know, again, as we talk about with addicts, we live in our head and not in our body. And if we do recovery in our head, but it doesn't change in our body how we are and who we are, then what kind of recovery is that?
You know? And like so many other arrangements, trickle down doesn't work here.
Right.
You're really going to have to work on getting into your body and clearing that space.
Mm-hmm. So it also says this on page 265. It says, step 11 is where we travel often to find greater levels of maturity through prayer and meditation. I like that again, that mm-hmm. we need to travel often here. It says, through meditation, we begin to visualize emotional sobriety. We find out what mm-hmm. ACA recovery looks like. We begin to see that recovery is a noticeable freedom from the damaging effects of the laundry list traits. We realize our step work has brought some measure of healing from the trauma and neglect of our childhood. We intuitively rely on the steps and meetings to face every situation in our lives. We rely upon God as we understand God for sure footing. With emotional sobriety, reparenting ourselves becomes a reality in our lives. We love ourselves. The proof of emotional sobriety can be found in our relationships with others and with God as we understand God. If our relationships are still controlling and without feelings or trust, we must consider the strength of our emotional sobriety. True emotional sobriety brings a connectedness to ourselves and to others. This connectedness in relationships is characterized by expressed feelings, trust, mutual respect, and an acknowledgement that a higher power is real. We realize we don't need to chase after others to soothe our childhood fear of abandonment. We begin to see that we can bring our true selves to a relationship. We have something to offer that is different than unhealthy dependence. This is what ACA recovery looks like. It addresses our rupture from our primary relationship with our family. This is the relationship that has colored every relationship going forward. A demonstration of ACA recovery and emotional sobriety must show that we have changed the pattern of our lives. We live with feelings, spirituality, and our true identity.
I like that. I think that's a good place to end our episode.
Yeah.
So. Thank you for listening, and we want to remind you that at the end of another episode that your story matters. Remember, there's something meaningful in every chapter. Don't wait to share your story until it's finished.
You can share your story with us on our Facebook page, Healing Paths, Inc., or on our website, www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com. This podcast is solely for the purpose of information and entertainment and does not constitute therapy, nor should it replace competent professional help.
At the end of another episode, we want to remind you that nobody has time for perfection. We are pursuing progress.
And remember the prayer of the perfectionist. Help me remember I can't do it all. Help me to take things one step at a time, and that the only step I need to focus on is the next right step for me.
Help me to remember that life is a journey. Help me to be able to separate all that I am learning from all that I have to do. Help me to remember that I am not alone, that I can ask for help. Help me to strive for frequent awakenings, not mastery. I am enough. Amen.